भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 2 चैप्टर 5 द कॉज ऑफ ऑल कॉजेस टेक्स्ट नंबर 10। नानृतं तवत चापि यथा मां प्रब्रवशि भोः अविज्ञाया परं मता एतवा त्वं यतो हि मे। नानृतं तवत चापि यथा मां प्रब्रवशि भो अविज्ञाया परं मता एतवा त्वं यतो हि मे। नानृतं तव तच्चापि यथा मां प्रब्रवशि भो अविज्ञाया परं मता एतावत्त्वं यतो हि मे। वर्ड फॉर वर्ड ना नॉट अनृतम फॉल्स तवा ऑफ योर्स तत् दैट च आल्सो अपि एज यू हैव स्टेटेड यथा in the matter of mam of myself prabravishi as you describe bho o my son avigyaya without knowing param the supreme mattah beyond myself etavat all that you have spoken tvam yourself Yataha, for the reason of, he certainly may about me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, whatever you have spoken about me is not false, because unless and until one is aware of the personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate truth beyond me, one is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. Purport. The frog in the well logic illustrates that a frog residing in the atmosphere and boundary of a well cannot imagine the length and breadth of the gigantic ocean. Such a frog, when informed of the gigantic length and breadth of the ocean, first of all does not believe that there is such an ocean. And if someone assures him that factually there is such a thing, the frog then begins to measure it by imagination, by means of pumping its belly as far as possible. With the result that the tiny abdomen of the frog bursts and the poor frog dies without any experience of the actual ocean. Similarly, the material scientists also want to challenge the inconceivable potency of the Lord by measuring him with their frog-like brains and their scientific achievements, but at the end they simply die unsuccessfully like the frog. Sometimes a materially powerful man is accepted as God or the incarnation of God without any knowledge of the factual God. Such a material assessment may be gradually extended and the attempt may reach to the highest limit of Brahmaji, who is the topmost living being within the universe and has a duration of life unimaginable to the material scientist. As we get information from the most authentic book of knowledge, the Bhagavad Gita, 8:17, Brahmaji's one day and night is calculated to be some hundreds of thousands of years on our planet. This long duration of life may not be believed by the frog in the well, but persons who have a realization of the truths mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita accept the existence of a great personality who creates the variegatedness of the complete universe. It is understood from the revealed scriptures that the Brahmaji of this universe is younger than all the other Brahmas in charge of the many, many universes beyond this. But none of them can be equal to the personality of Godhead. Naraji is one of the liberated souls, and after his liberation, he was known as Narada. Otherwise, before his liberation, he was simply a son of a maidservant. The questions may be asked why Naraji was not aware of the Supreme Lord, and why he misconceived Brahmaji to be the Supreme Lord, although factually he was not. A liberated soul is never bewildered by such a mistaken idea. So why did Naraji ask all those questions just like an ordinary man with a poor fund of knowledge? There was such bewilderment in Arjuna also, although he is eternally the associate of the Lord. Such bewilderment in Arjuna or in Narada takes place by the will of the Lord so that other non-liberated persons may realize the real truth and knowledge of the Lord. The doubt arising in the mind of Narada about Brahmaji's becoming all-powerful is a lesson for the frogs in the well, that they may not be bewildered in misconceiving the identity of the personality of Godhead, even by comparison to a personality like Brahma. So what to speak of ordinary men who falsely pose themselves as God or an incarnation of God? The Supreme Lord is always the Supreme, and as we have tried to establish many times in these purports, no living being, even up to the standard of Brahma, can claim to be one with the Lord. One should not be misled when people worship a great man as God after his death as a matter of hero worship. There were many kings like Lord Ramachandra, the king of Ayodhya, but none of them are mentioned as God in the revealed scriptures. To be a good king is not necessarily the qualification for being Lord Ram. But to be a great personality like Krishna is the qualification for being the personality of Godhead. If we scrutinize the characters who took part in the battle of Kurukshetra, we may find that Maharaj Yudhishthira was no less a pious king than Lord Ramachandra. And by character study, Maharaj Yudhishthira was a better moralist than Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna asked Maharaj Yudhishthira to lie, but Maharaj Yudhishthira protested. But does that not mean that Maharaj Yudhishthira could be equal to Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna? Thank you. Sorry. Lord Krishna asked Maharaj Yudhishthira to lie, but Maharaj Yudhishthira protested. But that does not mean that Maharaj Yudhishthira could be equal to Lord Ramachandra or Lord Krishna. The great authorities have estimated Maharaj Yudhishthira to be a pious man. But they have accepted Lord Ram or Krishna as the personality of Godhead. The Lord is therefore a different identity in all circumstances, and no idea of anthropomorphism can be applied to him. The Lord is always the Lord, and a common living being can never be equal to him. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here the essence of this verse is that if one lacks knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one might accept someone else to be the Supreme Lord. Someone who can exhibit some powerful activities or extraordinary qualities, that person might be accepted as God if we lack the proper understanding of who Krishna is or who God is. So here, in this series of verses, it seems that Narada Muni is a bit bewildered, that he is taking Brahma to be the supreme. But as we hear in the purport that this was all the leela of the Lord, because Naradaji, he's a liberated soul, and in his previous life he was the son of a maid servant. So we know the pastime how Some Bhaktivedantas visited his house or his mother's house during the Chaturmasya season. So they were stranded in one place. So he got the good fortune of being able to serve them and to be able to hear from them. And then the whole gradual process is described how he became a pure devotee. So obviously, even in the first canto we see that he knew that Brahma is not God, but Krishna is God. So then, now in his next life, he is Naradaji. So how is it then that he has forgotten that Krishna is God and that he is taking Brahma to be supreme? So as Prabhupada mentions, this is the Leela of the Lord, because Krishna wants to teach through Narada us, the non-liberated living entities like us, that the knowledge of Krishna. So Krishna is using Narada as an instrument, and Prabhupada gives the example of Arjuna. So Arjuna is also a liberated soul, but he was also bewildered by the illusory agency of the Lord, and he was seemingly acting on the bodily platform, though he is a liberated soul. So these are all this is the Leela of the Lord, but so we should not take Narada to be an ordinary soul. So here Prabhupada opens the purport by describing the frog in the well logic. So where we have all heard this story many, many times before. So there was this well, and in this well there was a community of frogs. There was a whole community there. So there were so many frogs there, and one of the frogs was the wise one. He was a great thinker and scholar and very mature. He knew everything about the well, about the intricacies of the well, the geography of the well, the history of the well, and everything. So, but there was this one frog who was very enthusiastic and very athletic, and he managed to jump out of the well. So he managed to jump out of the well, and nearby he saw an ocean. So he was like astonished. He saw this huge expanse, huge body of water. So then this athletic frog again jumped back into the well to tell everyone of the news, the great discovery he had made. So then he went to the senior most frog and he said, "Hey, leader frog, you know, I managed to jump out and I saw a huge body of water. It's nothing like that I've ever seen." He said, "Okay, so is it twice the size of this well?" He said, "No, it's not twice the size. It's much more." He said, "Okay, four times." So then as he was, the leader frog was saying two times or four times, he was puffing himself up just to give an estimation of the size of the well it could be. He said, even bigger than that. Then he said, "Okay, 10 times, and he puffed himself more. So he became like quite big. And he said, "No, it's, you know, 10 times is nothing." Then he tried to puff himself more, but he burst and he died. So Prabhupada compares this to the material scientists. Their attempt to understand Krishna or the inconceivable potencies of the Lord is actually like the frog in the well. So scientists are trying to understand the origin of the universe, what is life, where did we come from, and you know, all about this universe. But these are perennial questions, and philosophers have been debating about this from time immemorial, but they haven't reached a conclusion. So many philosophers, so many theories, and then they fight amongst themselves, and then they say this one is right, this one is wrong. Ultimately, they all get rejected. So the point is, they are trying to understand the reality or the truth through their material mind and senses. So through our material mind and senses, it is impossible to know about Krishna. It is impossible to know about the origin of life, about God, because we are extremely limited. So they're trying to understand the unlimited through the limited. And as we know, that we have four defects. So based on these four defects, we cannot put forward any perfect knowledge. And in fact, even scientists, they know that their endeavor, or at least some of the ones who are a bit humble, they know that they have limitations. They themselves admit they have limitations. For example, in 1980, Kenneth A. Boulding, he was the president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. So during an address to that organization's annual convention, he said that cosmology, our stance in cosmology is very insecure. Because, he said, because we study a very large universe with a very small and biased sample. So their sample is this Earth. And with this, they're trying to understand the whole universe. And then further, he said that we have only been looking at it very carefully for a very small fraction of its total time span. So in the total span of the creation, in only small time span of 40, 50 or 100 years, they're trying to understand everything. And then he says that, and we know intimately an even smaller fraction of its total span in space. So it is like unlimited space. And they're only studying a very minute space. So then there, even some honest scientists are admitting that they have limitations. The science has limitations. And on top of that, they're trying to understand the reality through the senses, which have limitations in itself. So we know our senses are imperfect. So many examples of that are there. We can only see our range of sight is very, very limited. The electromagnetic range is very broad, but we can only see from, you know, like 400 to 700 micro something. And our range of hearing is also very limited, from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. Anything below and above that, we cannot hear. So other species, some species' senses are more developed, others are not so developed. So the reality is it's very relative, depending on the type of senses we have been gifted with. So the attempt of scientists is so foolish. And then on top of that, we are prone to be illusioned. Our senses are very easily illusioned. There's so many visual illusions are there. You know, there's so much studies into that. And sometimes we take water to be cold when our hands are very... we take warm water to be cold when our hands are very warm. And the opposite. So in this way we can see that our senses are subject to illusion. And not only that, there's this Dr. R.L. Gregory. He says he's the director of the Brain and Perception Laboratory at the University of Bristol in England. So he says that it's not only are our senses illusion, but sometimes when we see the reality, we take those perceptions to be not factual. So we think we are dreaming. He says that also happens. So even if the leader frog happened to jump out of the well and see the ocean, he might still think, I'm actually dreaming, or this is an illusion, and I'm hallucinating. So when Krishna showed the universal form to Mother Yashoda in his mouth, of course Mother Yashoda is on a totally different platform. But she also thought, maybe I'm dreaming, though she was seeing the universal form. But of course that's different. She's covered by the yoga maya. So because Krishna wanted her to come back to her rasa of parental affection, because that would, seeing the universal form would invoke awe and reverence for Supreme Lord, which he didn't want that. But the point is, sometimes when, even if we see the reality, our brain can trick us into thinking that, no, this is a hallucination. And then the other defect is, we are prone to mistakes. And the scientific community is full of mistakes. So a very famous one is the Hubble telescope. Now it's called the Hubble variable. Because their calculations, they made mistakes in the calculations. So now they call it the Hubble variable. And another famous mistake is of the dinosaur. So the dinosaur is called, the scientific name is Brontosaurus. So that's the scientific name for dinosaur. So in actually there's nothing like a dinosaur. This is a big mistake this person made. A Yale scholar, his name was a Yale paleontologist. His name was Berman. So he said that what happened in 1881 was, in Colorado, they excavated this Brontosaurus, another so-called dinosaur. So this is what they excavated. So they found this body, but the head was missing. So the head they found some distance away. So this person, usually he would, his guesses would be right. You know, he would find certain remains here, other remains over there, and he would put it together, and his guesses would be usually right. But this time he made a mistake. The head was of something else. So they, you know, they put it together and they said this is the dinosaur. So later they said actually this is not a dinosaur. This is a totally different head. So in this way we can see that maybe what he found was a lizard, and then you know found some other head, and then they speculated and came up with a whole idea of a dinosaur. So in this way we see that people make mistakes. The scientific community, which people have so much faith in, trust in, and they accept the authority as supreme, they are prone to these four defects. And then the biggest one is the cheating defect. Not only to err is human, make mistakes is human, but not only they actually on purpose they cheat, we see. On purpose they put forward so many false theories. And a very famous example of this is the Piltdown Man. You heard of this one? The Piltdown Man. So in 1912, the archaeologists, they excavated a human-like skull and an ape-like jaw. So in one area they found, you know, like a human-like skull and an ape-like jaw. So they said, see, look, this is the proof that man came from monkeys. The jaw is from an ape and the skull is from a human. So then they, you know, they put it together, they cleaned it nicely, and now it's there, it's even there in the, they put it in the museum, in the British Museum. So they showed this is the transitional phase from monkey to man. But then in 1953, investigators discovered that the jawbone was kind of fabricated. So fabricated in the sense that it was made very, they stained it. So it looked like it was a stained fossil. But in reality, it wasn't very old. The jaw was quite recent, as even like the skull was recent. The jaw was also recent. But it looked very stained from fossils, but it actually wasn't. And then they also filed the teeth. So they did something to the teeth, you know, and they made it look like a monkey teeth or an ape-like teeth. So in this way we can see the cheating propensity. And then they said, okay, you know, man has come from monkeys. But the whole thing was a fabrication and it was a scam. So we can see that our scientific community, in which people have so much faith, we cannot actually trust them. Because first of all, they're trying to understand reality through the mind and senses. And on top of that, the senses have four defects. So how can we trust them? And this is what we have been taught in school. And we accept their nonsense theories. And on top of that, so much research is conducted. Like those people who are conducting research, they're controlled by, you know, governments, they're controlled by research institutes and by universities. So their research, they can't really, even if they know the facts, sometimes they cannot present it. Because ultimately, the research is being done to make profit. So it's what, you know, in all the stages of research, it's highly controlled. So there, it's all limited. What we're hearing is actually not the truth. So here Prabhupada uses the word anthropomorphism. So anthropomorphism means that to think that God is like a human. To impose the human form on God. That's what it means by anthropomorphism. So this is very rampant all over the world. And Prabhupada explains why it is rampant. And actually Krishna explains why it is rampant. It's because of this verse. Kankshanta karmanam siddhim yajanta iha devata shipram hi manushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. So men in this world desire fruitive results, success in fruitive activities, and therefore they approach the demigods to fulfill their material desires. And indeed, they get fulfilled by demigods. So Prabhupada explains that because of this fruitive mentality or because of this strong material desires, people take someone to be God because they want to fulfill their material desires. So they don't mind submitting to someone, or they don't mind elevating someone to the post of God as long as they get what they want. And once they get what they want, then they kick that person. So demigod worship is especially performed by those who are full of material desires. So kamaistayastayar hitagyana. So those whose intelligence is stolen by material desires, they take shelter of the demigods. So that's the problem with material desires. Material desires are not very innocent because they deprive one of one's real intelligence, that we are a servant of Krishna. So because one is deprived of one's real intelligence, then one takes shelter of someone powerful. So these days it's not only limited to demigods, but some people elevate anyone to the post of a god, as long as they can get something out of them. So a prime example of this is Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu wanted certain benedictions. He actually wanted to kill Vishnu. So in order to do that, he wanted certain benedictions. He also wanted to become immortal. So Hiranyakashipu, he performed severe penances, and then the entire universe was in crisis, and the demigods, they approached Lord Brahma and said to do something about the situation. And then Lord Brahma came down on his swan carrier, and there he saw Hiranyakashipu, and he sprinkled drops of nectar on him, and he assumed a very strong body. And then when Hiranyakashipu, he saw Lord Brahma, he was in extreme ecstasy. And he offered his dandavats and he was crying and his whole body was shivering. And then he offered wonderful prayers, which were more or less saying that, you are the Supreme. His prayers were glorifying Brahma as the Supreme Lord. So just to give an example of one prayer, he said, he says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, who in His unlimited, unmanifested form has expanded the cosmic manifestation, the form of the totality of the universe, He possesses external and internal energies, and with the mixed energy called the marginal potency, which consists of all living beings. So then he says, there's nothing separate from you, whether it be better or lower, stationary or moving. So in this way, he glorified Brahma as the supreme. So this is an example of anthropomorphism. So, because he wanted something in return from Brahma. And once he got what he wanted from Brahma, then he didn't give a damn about Brahma. So this is the mentality, because the material desires are very, very strong. So when material desires are strong, one doesn't mind submitting oneself to someone higher. And we see this everywhere, from the corporate world to the non-corporate world. It's there. So people will glorify their boss or the CEO in order to get a promotion. So this idea of anthropomorphism is to think that God has a human-like form. But it's actually the other way around. So they are trying to... First they say, God cannot have a form. Generally that's what a lot of people think. God cannot have a form. But why cannot God have a form? Because if Krishna is Janmadiya Sayataha Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha, if Krishna is the cause of all causes, then he is the cause of all forms. So then everything we have, he should have plus much more. So to say that, you know, Krishna cannot have a form is imperfect understanding. So Krishna has the impersonal feature and the personal feature. Both are there in him. But of course, Krishna's form is entirely different. Krishna's form is spiritual. It's not like Krishna's form is not like our form. So sometimes people say, you know, if Krishna has a form, if God has a form, doesn't that limit him? You know, we have heard this argument. Maybe you have heard come across this argument. Sometimes people say, if God has a form, that limits him. Because if he's limitless, if he's unlimited, then he won't have a form. Because forms will limit him. But actually it's matter which limits things. It's not that Krishna's form will limit him. To have a form of matter is what actually limits people. Because matter is temporary and it is limited. Therefore they impose their own idea on God's form. So because we have a material form, and anything material, whether it is formless or has a form, it is limited. So, but Krishna's form is spiritual. So Krishna's form cannot be limited. So because we imply our conception on Krishna's form, therefore people take, you know, if God has a form, it limits him. And then sometimes people say, okay, if Krishna has a... why does Krishna have a human-like form? So, or they say, if God has a form, why does he have to have a human-like form? So that is also limiting God. So you say, you people are limiting God by saying that he has a human-like form. But they don't understand that it's actually the other way around. So so we can tell them, okay, why don't you... Okay, what you're saying sounds a little logical, but why don't you look at it the other way? So if God is there, why does he have a human-like form? Okay, why do we have a human-like form? We should ask this question. So in so many scriptures of the world, and it says that, you know, God has hands, eyes, legs, and even in the Ishopanishad it says like that. And even in the Srimad Bhagavatam is very vividly describes the form of the Lord. So how... especially in the 10th canto is described. Even in the other cantos, the form of Narayan or Vishnu is described. How Krishna is standing in his in his tribhanga form, he's holding a flute, he's decorated with minerals, he's wearing a garland, he has a turban on. So in this way we can see that how Krishna has a form. And how Krishna in his form is performing wonderful activities in Vrindavan. So, but they say, no, you know, that cannot be like that. Because Krishna is impersonal. But in fact, our form is an image of his form. In the Bible, as it says, in God's image we are made. So, our form is an image of his form. That's the reality. So it's not that because of our form, his form is like that. Or sometimes people, they read the Vedas and they get totally bewildered because in the Vedas there are words like nirguna, nirakar. So nirguna means without qualities and nirakar means without form. So they say, look, here it says nirguna and nirakar. But they don't see the whole picture. They just narrow themselves to one or two statements or one or two words and they'll say, look, here it says nirguna and nirakar. Or they get bewildered by the contradictions. Especially in Ishvapanishad, it says, he walks, but he does not walk. He's far, but he's near. You know, he runs faster than the mind, or he cannot walk. So with statements like this, they get fully bewildered. But Jiva Goswami, he describes another method of acquiring knowledge, another praman. You know, we know the three pramans. There's the Shabda, Anuman, and Pratyaksha. But there are seven other pramans. And one of them is called Arthapati. Arthapati means postulation. So like, just like, for example, if we say that, you know, such and such does not eat, but he's fat. Such and such does not eat during the day, but he's fat. So then one can conclude that he eats at night. So from two statements you can conclude, okay, such and such is fat. Fat means he's eating. If he's not eating, he would be a skeleton. But he eats only in the day. So you use the intelligence and you can figure out he eats at night. He eats, but he eats at night. So in the same way, when it says nirguna and nirakar, that he has no form, but then the very next, you know, statement will be he has a form. So then you can conclude he has no, God does not have a material form, but he has a different type of form. He has a spiritual form. So one can actually conclude that Krishna has a form. But because they are so foolish, they cannot understand that Krishna has a form. So the main point as in this verse is to understand the personality of Godhead factually. Because if we don't understand the personality of Godhead factually, then we might mistake anyone who displays some extraordinary feature to be God. Like in India, the famous God just died, you know, very recently, a year or two ago. He was producing gold watches, or golden eggs were coming out of his mouth. He had big hair. So people thought he's God, because he can do something, you know, marvelous. And even to that, there are some people dispute that. They say that that was all a magical trick, you know. There was just some illusion he was doing. Even a magician can do something like that. So we can see that we need to have proper understanding of Krishna. And then Prabhupada gives the example of that just to be a pious king doesn't mean you're Lord Ram. Because Maharaj Yudhishthira was very pious, doesn't mean he's God. Because Prabhupada gives the example of that. Maharaj Yudhishthira was, from the mundane sense, more pious than Krishna. Because Krishna had so many paramas. Krishna was dancing in the dead of night with other men's wives. So this is an extremely immoral activity. And here Maharaj Yudhishthira, from the mundane point of view, material point of view. But Maharaj Yudhishthira would not even speak a lie, and Krishna was encouraging him to speak a lie. So then people say, see, Krishna is not God. How can he be God? Actually, Maharaj Yudhishthira is God. Because some people think like this, because they have no understanding of what it means to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then they take anyone who is extraordinarily pious to be God. But we see that even if Lord Ram, he acts in a very pious way, but every now and then he will exhibit his God. He will perform extraordinary acts, which no one can perform. So Lord Ram, he built this bridge from Kanyakumari to Lanka. No one can do that. So only God can do something like that. So this requires knowledge, and this world is full of nescience. And Prabhupada's back to Godhead is where there's light, there's no darkness, nescience. Godhead is nescience, yeah. Yeah, thank you. So transcendental knowledge is like the light. So at night there is darkness. We cannot, if there's no, the moon is not out and there are no street lights, we cannot even see our own hand. We cannot see our face. We cannot see what's around us. So today civilization is living in darkness, in the darkness of ignorance. So Krishna, when he comes, he dispels transcendental knowledge, or he dispels this light which illuminates things, and then one can see reality. So our mission, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, is to broadcast this knowledge which will bring about a revolution in the impious lives of the citizenry. So people are living in darkness, though there's so much illumination these days. It wasn't like this before. You know, light coming from the iPad, from, you know, stadiums are so bright, so different kinds of lights are there. You can have different effects. This technology has advanced so much, the communications has advanced, but still people are in ignorance. Their ignorance is actually increasing by advancement of material science. So Srila Prabhupada, he came to dispel this ignorance, because that's the job of a guru. A guru is someone who knows, and they dispel with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So that was Srila Prabhupada's mission. And Srila Prabhupada especially did that through his books. So Srila Prabhupada wrote these books to dispel the darkness. And these books are extremely powerful. So when one opens them and you read one or two sentences, you can feel this is something different. It's not from this world. And this is something deep and serious. So when people read these books, the darkness in their heart is dispelled. All the darkness goes away. And Srila Prabhupada, he translated over 80 books. He put so much of his time and energy. He was translating in the early hours of the morning. He was doing service all day, then sleeping for 2 or 3 hours. And then he was translating these books for us to read. And not only for us to read, but also to share this knowledge with others. So we don't have to keep it to ourselves. Otherwise we are like the Brahmana who doesn't give out the knowledge, and he ends up losing everything. So if knowledge is not given out, it somehow leaks and it goes away. So the more we give, the more we get. That's the formula in spiritual life. So Srila Prabhupada wanted this transcendental knowledge to be broadcast all over the world through different mediums. So through any medium, it should be broadcast, whether it's through, you know, e-books or Facebook or printed copies or through the radio. This knowledge has to be broadcast. But books are special because people can carry them wherever they go. So the future of book distribution is very interesting because e-books are becoming very prominent. So in the future, we might have to walk around with an iPad and show people the book and get them to buy it there, make a credit card payment, and it comes on their account, comes on their device. Who knows? But still, at the moment, a lot of people still like to read a hardcover book. So this is a book. So this is still a good opportunity for us to go out there and share Srila Prabhupada's mercy by handing these books out. And when people read them, Srila Prabhupada said, even when they touch the books, they get so much benefit. What to speak of them, if they read it, they get a human form of life. So all the problems of the world are there because of this darkness. And Srila Prabhupada's books can bring a revolution in this world. If they're distributed sufficiently, if they're distributed very profusely, and some people will read them, it will bring about a change in them. And their perception of us will totally change. It was amazing. This Saturday we were chanting in some of the suburbs, and some people were doing like this to us. They were doing pranam. So it was quite amazing to see that. I'm sure because they've read some of our books and they've had prasadam and they've seen us before, so they have deep respect for what we are doing because they know this is quite genuine. Though they are unable to follow it, but they have deep respect for it because many people have read these books. Australia was one of the top countries in book distribution in the 80s. So these books are out there, and the younger generation especially needs these books. So this is a special month where we can endeavor to go out of our way to distribute a few of the some books as much as possible. So even if you're unable to distribute so many books, but if you're able to distribute a few small books, that makes a big difference. Because the small books are extremely potent, like the big books. The philosophy is there in an essence. Like my spiritual master, His Holiness Devamrita Swami, he became a devotee by reading teachings of the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Transcendental teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. It's a small booklet, it's not even a small book. It's just a few pages. But by reading that, it's like, it blew him away. This is, wow, what is this? So even few small books, that can make a huge difference. So I'll leave it there. You have any quick questions or comments? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.